Hello, Columbus, Chattahoochee Valley, all my friends down over in Marion and Chattahoochee County, and my folks over in Talbot County. We are still praying for you guys from the storms last week. And everybody, just make sure you're careful today, because the forecast says that we can have some more strong storms rolling in over the night. And so we certainly need to make sure that we are mindful of that and careful and watching the weather. We're in that time of year where, you know, the cold masses coming down from Canada is intertwining with the warm weather coming up from the tropics. And that creates some very, very dangerous conditions for us. If you recall last year around this time, there were some deadly tornadoes that went through Albany, Georgia. And so we're in that season to where we got to be careful. We got to look out for our neighbors. Check on the elderly people in your community. Please, 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 please. If you're watching the weather and you know we're expecting bad weather, make sure they have a plan. Make sure they have somewhere to go. Make sure someone is going to be there with them, because it's our duty. It's our duty. They did it for us when we were young, and now that they're up in age, we got to make sure that we're taking care of them. It's just responsibility. Don't question me. Just listen. Just listen to what I'm saying and just do it. Trust me, God will bless you tremendously. So let's take care of our people in our community. But we're going to continue this month's theme of Women History Month. But we're focusing locally on the Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese show. And I am beyond excited about my guest for today. I mean, she is literally like a walking legacy. She's just full of knowledge from right here in Columbus. One of our very own, well educated by HBCU. We're going to talk about that as well. But it is truly a pleasure to have with me today one of my good friends and certainly a mentor of mine, because she's taught me so much, whether she know it or not. And that is Dr. Judy Purnell. How you doing today, Dr. Purnell?
I am very, very excited to be on your show. As a matter of fact, I'm excited to be on any show at this stage in my life. But I do appreciate your saying wonderful things. Yes, and ma'am. And if there are other people that are, I'm excited about that as well. Because when you get to be my age, and finding out that most of the time when I walk in a room, I'm the oldest person there. Mm-hmm. It makes me feel really good to be thought of, and that people actually do want to hear some of the things that I might say. Not all of them, but maybe some of them.
Well, you know, Dr. Purnell, my listeners have heard me say before that my grandmother taught me a long time ago, and my grandmother will be 85 this week. She taught me a long time ago that if you do not know where you are, where you come from, you won't know where you're going. And with that knowledge, I used to sit down with my great uncles, with you know, the elderly people in my family, and I would just listen. And I would be so fascinated with the stories that they would tell, the struggles that they were able to articulate so lively. I felt like I was back there in those times during segregation and the struggles and the Ku Klux Klan threats and scares and the violence against black men and black women in general, and especially in some of our rural areas where it was less known, because you didn't have the cameras there, you didn't have the radio there. So I'm excited that you're here, and you're always welcome on the Teddy Reese Show.
Thank you, Mr. Reese. And I'm smiling because let me establish something. My name is Judy Purnell. I married a Purnell, but I am Judy Rutledge, and most of my family is in Fort Mitchell, Alabama, Phoenix City, and the surrounding counties. The Rutledges, James and McCoys, one family, basically. Mm-hmm. Home church, St. John AME Church, Highway 165, Fort Mitchell, Alabama. And I say that with a great deal of pride, because our family cemetery is there, and it's a historical burial ground. When we go back and read headstones, we know where we come from.
Wow. Wow. There's so many families that don't know that. Now you grew up here in Columbus.
I grew up in Columbus.
What part of town?
Oh, I love it. Casita Road. I mean, you know, we were the Casita Road kids.
Tell me about Casita Road when you were growing up. What was it like?
Actually, it was originally Glade Road. Mm-hmm. It was extended from 10th Avenue mm-hmm. all the way out to Kendrick's Quarters. And on that, it was a small business district initially at one time. You had the funeral homes. We had a pharmacy there, White's Pharmacy, stores.
So this was a black-owned pharmacy?
Yes.
Wow.
Then we had a service station, gas pump, Leggett service station. And let me say this. Most of the people, all of us that were students, we all attended Manly Taylor Elementary. Mm-hmm. J.D. Davis didn't exist. Mm-hmm. So students had to go to Manly Taylor or There was a small school in the bottom area, which is now Martin Luther King Boulevard, Milner Hill, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And I think it went to like the third or fourth grade. So we all ended up Manly Taylor. And out of those students that actually, kids that grew up in that neighborhood, almost everyone is a professional of some type. Entrepreneurs, doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs. And wow. We loved it. As a matter, because we supported each other.
Mm-hmm.
One big family. Everyone knew everyone. We were in and out of folks, out of each other's homes. So it was just a wonderful kind of environment, even though it was during the time of segregation.
Mm-hmm.
I remember not having, before the Mildred Terry Library really opened, 1954, if I'm not mistaken, my mother ordered a set of World Book Encyclopedias. So our home became like a study center, because that was a way of getting access and information.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy Leonard, our backyards join. Tommy is now a doctor. He teaches at Baylor University Med School, neonatal intensive care.
From right here in
right
Columbus.
Here in Columbus, our backyard,
off of Cedar Road.
Off Cedar Road. Then, one block away, you had Geneva Turner, PhD in nursing research, retired colonel, if I'm not mistaken, out of the military. Across the street from me, Walter Smith. And he was the National Merit Scholar for Muskogee County in 1966.
Oh, my God.
That's right. So we encouraged each other. The rest are business owners, and they're doing quite well. We just, it was a support system that we just don't have anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The community made us who we are.
What happened to it, Dr. Brunel?
The churches. We were taught everywhere, morals, ethics. And there were standards of behavior. Now we embrace almost anything.
How did we become so fragile and so influential that we would leave the foundation of what was working and find ourselves in a position where our kids are being influenced by things that are bad?
Well, let me say this, Teddy, and a lot of people hate this. When people say, old freedom,
mm-hmm.
we came free. Integration. We got past the 1964-65 Voting Rights Act. People were able to move out of those communities. We no longer had heavily segregated communities anymore. That's what's happening now.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get a mix, then acculturation takes place. Socialization, social skills, behavior patterns. You take on the bet of other people.
Wow. Now you told me once you graduated here, you left and went to Tuskegee in 67.
Yes, sir.
What was it like attending Tuskegee?
Well, let me say before I got to Tuskegee,
mm-hmm.
how I got there.
Okay.
I got accepted at other schools. I was in the top 20 of my graduating class. Most of the people that lived in my neighborhood were all of us with National Honor Society at Spencer. I got accepted at Emory University. I went up for an interview to Atlanta. They accepted me, but they told me they couldn't house me because they didn't house Negroes.
No.
Yes. I won't talk about Spelman. That was back in the day. I couldn't get the monies that I wanted for Spelman. Plus, that was something else. And when you applied to Spelman, you had to put a photograph on your application.
Mm-hmm.
Then they asked a couple of questions, whether your father graduated from Morehouse or your mother from Spelman. I had none of those things going for me.
Mm-hmm.
Tuskegee gave me a full ride. The only thing about that ride, I had to work. And that's where that was a good training ground for me.
Yes, ma'am.
Ended up at Tuskegee in 1967. SNCC was still big, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee.
Mm-hmm.
Members of SNCC were still in Tuskegee. Sammy Young, who was a student at Tuskegee, was killed in 1966.
Now, John Lewis was in SNCC.
John Lewis was in SNCC. They were all in Selma.
Okay.
But when SNCC split, John went to Southern Regional Council.
Mm-hmm.
And SNCC, the other SNCC members that were still together, ended up with the Federation of Southern Co-ops.
Ah.
I worked for the Federation of Southern Co-ops after I graduated from Tuskegee because I had met a lot of SNCC workers.
Yes, ma'am.
And some of them are living in Tuskegee right now, and many of them are still in Epps, Alabama, which was the headquarters for SNCC.
Not for SNCC,
but the Federation of Southern Co-ops.
Okay. Now you told me that when you got there, Tuskegee set a standard for you guys and wanted you to know that you stand on the shoulders of people greater than you. Tell the listeners about the dormitory lesson that you received.
The first dorm I lived in was Whitehall. And when you go to Tuskegee, you can clearly recognize it because it has a clock tower on it.
Mm-hmm.
We were called into a meeting the first night by our dorm mothers. I don't know if they have them anymore. So she could explain to us who we were. We all had come together from all over the country, all over the world. We were all in the top 20s of our graduating classes. We thought we were somebody until our dorm mother told us the story, the history of the dormitory that we were living in. She said each brick for this building was made by hand by students. They dug the foundation with shovels, and there were no power tools back then. There was no backhoes. They dug that foundation for that building and hauled that dirt away in wheelbarrows. She told us that they built that dorm not for themselves, but they built it for us because they knew we were coming.
Wow.
And we came.
And it's still there.
It's still there.
You know, I was in Jamaica this past weekend, and I had to get away from the tourist area. I had to go into the countryside. So we hired a private taxi driver to take us out there. And I saw a bridge that was built by slaves in 1829, and that is still the only bridge in this particular village. Now, it's not a blazing village where, you know, stores or anything. As a matter of fact, some of the native people, we saw them coming out of the woods to bathe in the river.
Okay.
I saw canoe boats. And I learned so much about history, particularly about that country. And I told my wife, I said, never again will I go on another vacation and stay in the tourist designated area. Somebody's going to take me to learn about the culture of the people. You are teaching us now about the culture of our own people, because we don't learn this in school. We don't get this type of information.
What has happened in history departments in most places, Mr. Reese, is that people retire. I should be retired from teaching. But there, you can't make the transition unless you have an older person to bridge it for you. Most of the young people, and I'm adjunct at Tuskegee now, the majority of the people in the history department are not 50 years of age, which means that they missed most of the struggle. Mm. They didn't have to participate. You know, I was a child growing up here in Columbus. We knew who Dr. King was. As a matter of fact, my father was a member of the Prince Hall Masons that brought Dr. King here. But there was a non-attendance from the community. And Dr. King said that he would never come back to Columbus, and he never did. He went to all the cities around. So you got to have someone who can bridge, make that transition, to show people that, hey, this did in fact happen, and sort of make it real to them if you can create vision. And I think the theme for Women's History Month is women of vision. You got to have vision. You got to believe that something can happen and then make it happen. You don't give up just because you're tired. The race is not promised to the fast nor the swift, but what? Those who endure to the end. So you got to be a runner, and you got to pace yourself. You got to know that everything is not going to go your way. Mm-hmm. If you read The Miseducation of the Negro in America, you know, Carter G. Woodson said, now you can't find, you wouldn't even be fine, you'll find people that are not even interested in their history. We have been brainwashed, bamboozled, as Malcolm X said. Mm-hmm. We've been taught against ourselves. We don't even, some black folks don't even like other black folks, you know. We get too black for folks. You can be too dark skinned. Mm. We, It's the Willie Lynch syndrome. It's going to take for a long time for us to get past some of those issues that society has defined and set up the parameters for us. W.B. Du Bois said that the greatest challenge we would have coming into the 20th century, now we're in the 21st, would be the issue of skin color.
Wow.
And we've had to deal with that.
I got to ask this question. Well, did they have a ban at Tuskegee when you were there?
I'm going to get you, Mr. Reese. Did they have a band?
Yes, like
the Marching 100.
The Marching 100.
Marching 100.
Were they playing ball and parlay back then, too?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Listen, wow. The Marching 100, the band at Tuskegee, only males could be in the band. No females. The drills, they said, were too hard. And you had other schools who had super bands. Florida A&M, Tennessee State, mm-hmm. The Death March. You see, those are the things that when you see precision like that.
Yes.
You know, we not only were we taught things, we were taught how to live with each other, for one thing. And when you get into an environment that is all black, and you've been in a segregated environment anyway, now you've got people coming from all over the world who have had different experiences with segregation. And here they are coming. We are all here together sharing that information. My roommates, people that I met when I was 18, I still talk to.
Wow.
And one of my roommates, I was in her wedding 40-some years ago. I talked to her yesterday. She's in D.C. She retired as a president of a university.
You know, I once read in an article, and you probably know, I'm sure you know more about this than I do, that from a music foundation, that we, the descendants of Africans, that we hear and understand music different than our Caucasian counterparts. And that the rhythm and the way that it's ingrained in our culture, and it was a part of who we were and some of who they still are and in Africa. And when you see HBCU bands, to me, I think that here in the States, it's close to one of the only things that we have that demonstrate our talent and our connectivity and our love for real music.
Music is not my background, but let me say this. If you can teach babies while they're still in the womb, you know, we're very rhythmic anyway.
Right.
Black people are going to play music in their homes. So if a woman is pregnant, and if there's truth to the fact that that the fetus can be taught certain things, the child is going to be raised, before it's born, is going to be started hearing music. You already know that.
Right. Right.
That's what we do.
Right.
I mean, it's part of the culture, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's a lot of folks don't want to hear certain kinds of music because they think it makes them too black.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't play a blues. Play the blues, and I don't get involved. Okay,
I know
blues, gospel, jazz, rhythms.
Yes.
Love to see my people happy. You know, even if it's a temporary thing,
yes.
We have to have that escape.
When I was young, my mom used to play this record, something about Scratch My Back. And I used to love that song.
Hoppo.
See, yeah. I knew you would do what I was talking
Scratch
about.
My
Come
back.
On, baby. Scratch my back.
I'm,
oh,
but the thing,
I know you can do it.
Hey! But if we were talking about music, you know, gospel tells a story.
Yes, ma'am.
The blues tells a story.
Mm-hmm.
Country, Western. It was, you know, country music. I mean, it didn't matter. There are some country artists I listen to.
Right.
You know, when I was younger and I was doing a lot of traveling, fortunately I had a job with the government where I traveled a lot, doing field research, because see, now you don't have to do that. You got the computers, you can send it, email it. Mm-hmm. We had to go out and pick it up, which means that I've been to a lot of places in this country where there weren't any black people, okay? Mm. I was in Butte, Montana, walking down the sidewalk, and I saw someone that was really dark, and I yelled to them, but it was a cowboy. He had been out on the range. He was just tanned, okay?
Wow.
There are a couple of places up in the Cumberland Mountains where there are very few black people. So we're not everywhere. We're concentrated on the East Coast. But when you start heading west, there are some places out west that you don't see any. Mm-hmm. Lamar, Colorado. Places that people never even heard of. I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's when you get a lot of exposures, you get a different view of who people really are. You know, and your worldview changes. All you need to do is start talking to people. You'll find that we have more things in common than things that are not common to us.
Did Tuskegee have a concentrated effort to teach you guys as young women coming into the institution about the challenges you would face in society and build you up and give you the confidence that you need to be successful?
Let me share something with you. My department chair, Dr. Yora Qualls. Dr. Qualls heard me talking one day in the hallway, and she asked me where I was from, and I said, Columbus, Georgia. She said, would you step inside of my classroom? It was a linguistics class, and tell these young people where you're from.
Mm-hmm.
Because she said that my enunciation was, she was fascinated with it. And she told me, she said, it's too bad that broadcast journalism has not opened its doors to Negroes, because you would be a prime candidate. And that was in 1967, 68. So, you know, you have to have that type of encouragement. But mine came from Columbus. I didn't have to go to Tuskegee. When I was in school, students that were pushed to be. When I was in the fifth grade, my fifth grade teacher, Miss Amalie Lovett at Manly Taylor Elementary, took me to Pew Street School, which is now Hannah Elementary, because Miss Hannah was there. She was still alive then, to have me do something by Paul Lawrence Dunbar. And I didn't. That was my first probably stage presentation. And because we all were singers, everybody could sing. We doo-wopped. We were in the church choir. Come on. I had a partner that I sang with named Molly Bryant. She's deceased now. We would win all the talent competition. But when we had a choral director, and this is in high school, And you know what? Everybody that's listening to me is going to get me, because Miss Edmonds, she made sure that we could sing. She got us ready for college prep, HBCU prep. We sang all the songs that they sang at Tuskegee, at Spencer High School. And we were competitive. We were glad that Carver High School was there, because they had a group there. They were excellent. Patricia, is it your, I can't even think of her name. She was the music director for a while at Carver Chorus. She was in high school when I was there. Then you had people at South Girard. See, we knew everyone.
Wow.
And we sang competitively. There were choral competitions for the state of Georgia. Mm-hmm. And I remember when we won first place with Hallelujah Chorus. I was a first soprano then. You can't tell that with this contralto voice now. But I was a soloist. Prior to that, that was another young lady. So we were understudies. Wow. And so they actually programmed us for excellence. You want it to be.
It's what we call today, what we want to call mentorship, but we don't.
Yes. Much of that. And you know.
It's been redefined and redesigned and recalibrated.
But see, the teachers lived in our neighborhoods, okay?
That's the difference.
Okay.
That's a huge difference.
And they had no problems coming to your house. If something was going wrong, you could look up and see someone at your house. We knew them. And Miss Hill, my third grade teacher, took me back and forth to Tuskegee to visit her daughter in 1958. Who would have known that I would have ended up there as a student and graduate?
Wow. You are listening to the legendary Dr. Judy Rutledge-Purnell. And I told you this would be a treat, but we got to take a break, because I got to get my sponsor in for one quick second here on this commercial break. But when we come back, I promise you, you're going to be fascinated with some of the things that you're going to hear from Dr. Purnell. This is Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. We'll be right back.
Dear John, I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is serious, and I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to when you checked on me? I don't want to leave. But remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get yours to a healthy range today. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. If you missed the first half of that show, I tell you, you have missed something, and you need to catch it on one of the other shows later on today, because Dr. Judy Purnell, she's in here dropping some knowledge. She is in here spilling the tea. She is in here laying it on the line. She is in here telling it all and just educating us about who we are, where we come from, as we celebrate Women's History Month, as well as a twist, Women's Black History Month here locally in Columbus, Georgia. Now, Dr. Purnell, on the second half of this show, I want to bring it back to Columbus. This is after Tuskegee. This is after graduation. Let's bring it back to Columbus. And I'm sure there are some things you can, whatever you want to share, feel free to share. But I particularly want to talk about the time that you applied to be police chief here in Columbus, Georgia. Tell us about that. Tell us about the lead up to it.
1980. I hear that there are people in this radio station who weren't even born in 1980, but I'm going to go ahead anyway. 1980. Prior to that, let me do a little workup for you. I was in Tuskegee, went to Washington, D.C., worked for a while, ended up back in Atlanta, worked for Maynard Jackson, under Mayor Maynard Jackson, mm-hmm. On the crime analysis team. At that time, that was a new thing. The Law Enforcement Assistance Administration, LEAA, was big, and that was following the riots of 68. They had decided that they wanted to come up with some plans, action plans, to fund cities that had high crime rates. So I worked with Maynard Jackson. I ended up in Los Angeles. Fortunately for me, Maynard Jackson wrote a letter of introduction to Tom Bradley, who was the mayor of Los Angeles. So when I got out, I already had a job waiting for me. So I was a deputy. I was placed in a position. I didn't have to even apply. I was deputy director for the Criminal Justice Coordinating Committee in southern Los Angeles County. That included the cities of Compton, Linwood, Carson, and Paramount. And most people know Compton because you've heard Snoop Dogg and everybody CEO else singing Compton. About that's yes. right. He's riding down the street sipping on gin and juice.
Smoking some stuff.
Okay, so we threw with that one. But I ended up working for the Criminal Justice Coordinating Council. Then I returned to D.C. So I made a big circle. And when I got back to Washington, I worked for some other agencies, and I was there at the time when Marion Barry came with Pride and other organizations. Most of Johnson's Great Society Day programs that you all are not familiar with, like Model Cities, and here in Columbus, the Comprehensive Employment and Training Administration, CETA, job placement. I was a job placement counselor, the director of the program, Mr. Meinson, he was a retired colonel in the military, was the director. He resigned. I got the position. And I was. They had a private industry council in Columbus. See, all of those programs don't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. We could place people, and the federal government would offset their salaries with funds. So if somebody hired someone, if they were just getting out of prison, we could put them in a job and get their salary subsidized. I mean, they were wonderful kinds of programs. Kept the community going. Then a position for chief of police was open. They had a deputy safety director here named Reinke, R-E-I-N-K-E. Reinke opened the position up to the public. It had never been advertised. I was a police administrator. I had run programs in California. I was told by a young attorney that the position was open. Please go and apply. I'm all excited, man. I would take my application over. I still have my letter accepting my application and thanking me for applying. When I got back to my office, WTVM News was in my office, and I was in Heritage Towers downtown, asking me about the position. Did you really apply? Yes, I did. No one in the police department applied for the position. I was very upset. The mayor was Harry Jackson. When I applied, that opened it up for everyone in the country to apply. So applications came in. All of this is going on, I had to go get a handgun permit. It was an interesting time. I had a couple of calls to the office. They screamed through my secretary they were going to get me. Well, Judge Suggs was the probate judge then. So I walked over. We told him what was happening. It takes 4 weeks to get processed in the state of Georgia. He gave me a hand, approved me in 1 day. Told me to go to the police department to get fingerprinted. And at that time, Jack's Pawn Shop was on Broadway. He said, go around the street and buy yourself a handgun and a box of cartridges. He said, we can't protect you.
Wow.
It took them 15 years to appoint an African-American as chief of police here. So I applied in 1980. So I guess that was 1995 when Dozier became chief of police here. Wetherington was appointed by the mayor. According to the city charter for the city of Columbus, the mayor can appoint a department head, and Harry Jackson did. So that's how it happened. So, you know, I've never been afraid of things, and I think the people need to take the challenge. You know, that's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no fear.
Did you get an interview?
Oh, I didn't get an interview. They closed down the application process, and the mayor went ahead and appointed a chief of police, which was Wetherington. Wetherington wow. retired from here, and from what I know, went to the Pardon and Parole Board.
So, because clearly you would have had a very qualified application. So versus having to deal with explaining why you were not hired, they just, we're going to go a different route and just appoint someone.
Yes. And they did not cover my application, the story of it, of my applying here in Columbus at all.
Who covered it?
The Atlanta Constitution, Jet Magazine.
You were on Jet Magazine.
I wasn't on Jet. I'm in Jet Magazine.
In Jet Magazine.
July 1980. I like to tell people that because they always like, can you validate? You have to validate. When you make statements, always be able to validate yourself.
July 1980.
In July 1980.
They ran the story of you applying for police chief.
In that particular issue.
And no local news coverage touched it.
Only WTVM, and it was a very short interview. As a matter of fact, they asked me, what did I think my chances were of getting the position of chief of police?
Mm-hmm.
I told them, I said, probably like a snowball in hell, but I'm applying. You know, it's, excuse me, I mean, really.
I love it. Go ahead.
Let me say something. If you qualify for a position, mm-hmm. and you're going to sit back, you know, I know why we have the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission,
mm-hmm.
but I also hate the fact that we don't have people applying, filing complaints now. as if racism and everything has been dismissed. And I know it should be happening, and it's happening in the workplace and everywhere else. But young people nowadays don't read the U.S. Constitution. They don't know what their rights are. So they'll be violated, or anyone, you don't have to be young, be violated and not even take any action.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not that person. I am not that person. I hate it. But, you know, I was raised by a different kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
And the Rutledges, and I'm going to say this, since my cousin Cliff Rutledge works for Davis Broadcasting on Sunday morning, and I have one of my cousins is a county commissioner over in Russell County. The other one was is a presiding elder with the AME Church.
Wow.
We just don't sit back. We know our heritage, our ancestry. You know, I'm Millage Rutledge's granddaughter. Millage was born 1840. I got a copy of his death certificate. He died in 1936.
Wow.
That's right. Many were not highly educated, but they made sure that their children were. They pushed.
He was 96 years old when he died?
Yes.
Amazing.
It was past amazing because I've recently found out that he had two households at one time. So I'm sort of thrilled and not thrilled. I've just found some relatives, and but it's a matter of which I'm finding them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But that's the way people live then. If he had enough money to do it, that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad to know that I have other relatives that are last name Rutledge that are actually closer and kin to me than what I had already thought.
So Columbus back then to Columbus now, how would you analyze the scale of progression, and what do you think we need to be doing today to improve the conditions in our community?
Mr. Reese, let me sort of quote Spike Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't agree with a lot of things that Spike Lee has said or what he's done, but Spike Lee made a comment. We've moved away from our communities.
Mm.
All the black professionals that get monies, I applaud that. But we move away. We don't live in the communities anymore. I live in the community, which is very strange. You know, people come to my house because I live a couple of blocks from the station. Mm-hmm. They're like, I didn't know you lived in the hood. Well, I'm in the hood. I've been here since 1986. And my intent is to not move away from my people. I'm not afraid. A lot of people are. Now, I do have protections now because there are a lot of other folks that are criminals besides black folks, okay?
Exactly.
So I do have bars. I have the assist alarms and cameras and stuff. But I've never been burglarized. And being in the community over the years and raising my daughters there, we have provided a lot of service for a lot of people. Because at one time, I thought that we were the only people with internet on the whole in the whole block because we've done things for people in the past, such as powers of attorney. All they have to do is go get them what? Notarized. Simple wills. Divorce. Mm-hmm. I hate to say it. But you provide a community service.
Right.
And a lot of folks used to think I was the go-to person. You know, if a child got in trouble, they come to me. I'd find an attorney to take a case. And that's the way it was. So if you wanted that, say you want the hook up, go over there and see Professor Purnell. You know, she knows somebody. She'll call someone. You can get you some help. But if we all move away, there isn't another black professional, I don't think, in a mile radius of where I live. There are no doctors. You know, someone used to tell a story. They said that, you know, somebody walk over to the neighbor's door, knock on it. Hey, Jim, how you doing? Got a headache. You got anything for it? Because Jim's a doctor. Mm-hmm. But Jim happens to be black. Jim doesn't live in the black community anymore because it's not feasible. It doesn't function anymore for them. And I understand that because I've lived in those neighborhoods where I was the only black person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm real strange. I didn't like it because I had high visibility.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have high visibility wherever I live. See, I'm going to put the grill out in the backyard. You go get smoke across the fence, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The blues going to be playing real loud.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be that barrel house down Mississippi Delta sound.
Mm.
So if you are not into that, then you're going to call the police on me because there's a noise ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I've had that happen. I've had people, it's too much smoke. I raised my fence up even in the hood, man. It's an interesting paradox. It depends on who you are and what your purpose is in life. I don't want to not be with my people.
Mm-hmm.
I have a fear of that type of isolation. You know, I can walk out of my out of my front door And if I'm ill, I can just pass out in the yard. Somebody's going to call 911. I know my neighbors.
Right.
I've lived in neighborhoods I didn't really know them. And I don't want people to come to my house to see what I have in my house. I want them to come visit me. I want to be able to be relaxed. I want my conversation to be able to be relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to have to be pretentious. And that's who I am, you know. And most people that know me know that. I never want to not be Casita Road. I want to be basic black. I want to understand my people. I want to understand the people around me, but I want to understand mine even more so. And even at my age, I've just stopped recently going to the clubs, you know, because I want to go see what my people are doing. You can't teach about them unless you what?
Unless you
know about it.
That's right. You got to be around. When that day comes that God calls you home, how do you want to be remembered?
Mr. Reese, I don't want to ever live, and I'm going to say what I said at Metropolitan Baptist Church. I don't want my living to have been in vain. What is the purpose of being alive if you're not going to leave something that people can refer to and it makes sense? And no matter what I do and no matter how I live, guess what? If I do something real foul or I get charged with something before I die, guess what people are going to remember? Nothing about the good that I've done. They are always going to remember the worst that they can find. And right now, no matter how good you are, there's somebody out there trying to figure out a way to tear you down. So you got to always make sure that you monitor yourself and your associates. Because everyone who says that they're your friend, not your friend. It's all business, baby. And so with me, I'd rather stay out of the crowd rather than be in the crowd, because everyone knows that I'm ill-suited for public presentation. If you step to me wrong, you already know what time it is. I'm not rap tight and know it.
Wow.
But I will do whatever I can to aid my community to become a better place for people to live. And I believe that we can make a difference in the world. And that's probably why I'm still in the struggle for freedom, justice, and equality.
We're going to wrap up the show right there with the words of Dr. Judy Pinnell. It's all business, baby. Be mindful of the people that you have in your presence. And so, Dr. Pinnell, it's truly been an honor to have you on today to commemorate Women's History Month. You are women history here in Columbus. You are black history here in Columbus. You are a legacy lever and a legacy builder. The shoulders of the giants that you stood on, your shoulders are broad enough for so many of us to stand on yours. Thank you so much for all you've done. This has been Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. Hope you'll join us again next week. We're going to have another exciting guest, another black female guest. Yes, I'm keeping it going. I don't care who like it. I'm celebrating my black women this month because you are marvelous. You are fabulous. You are phenomenal. Thank you for who you are. See you next Sunday. Opinions stated by various contributors to this broadcast, its website, and its radio programs are not to be considered necessarily the beliefs of this radio station or Davis Broadcasting. Do you have questions or concerns or want to be a guest on Sunday Conversation? Come and join me, Teddy Reese. Send me an email at sundayconversations@dbicolumbus.com.